I think resilience, I mean, it's become very topical now. I think the cover of Oprah magazine this month is actually resilience. Like, I think that's what we do as chiropractors. We help to cultivate resilience. So resilience is the ability to prepare for, adapt to, and recover from stress, trauma, you name it. It takes into account your ability to adapt, but also to prepare for, to recover. And essentially that you can adapt to and have a positive outcome from anything that you encounter. So for me, resilience in the highest sense really, I think, aligns beautifully with what I think us as chiropractors, at least with a philosophical leaning, think that we do. We help people function at their most highest level and create positive outcomes. That is resilience.
This is the Chiro Inspired Podcast, where chiropractors come to learn, to be empowered, and to be inspired. I'm your host, Dr. Richard Letta. Hello and welcome to the Chiro Inspired Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Richard Letta. Thank you all for being here, tuning in, giving me your ear, giving me your headspace. It is always an honor to have you join me on this mission to unite the profession while we respect the diversity and honor the principles which it was founded upon. Today, I'm joined by, yes, another guest who has been on the podcast before, and that is my dear friend, Dr. Monique Andrews. A lot of you might have heard Dr. Mo's episode back at episode 111, where she talked about changing brains and changing lives. And as of this recording, that episode is actually my number one downloaded episode. So if you've missed it, I recommend going to it and taking a listen. And if you've heard it before, I still recommend you go back and listen to it once again, as there's so much knowledge and pearls that you can take from that interview. In today's conversation, Dr. Monique and I explore the role of the chiropractor, especially in today's day and age, when we've been dealing with COVID-19 for the last year or so, the changes in culture, and kind of just seeing how much divide there is in the world. My hopes with today's podcast was to really get centered on you as the chiropractor and what role you have in society. Part of our conversation also includes talking about cultivating resilience and also the polyvagal theory and how you can actually apply it to practice. So if you've never heard Dr. Monique speak, or you missed our last episode together, you are in for a treat. Dr. Andrews co-founded the Prana Group in Ottawa, Canada, with her wife, Dr. Tamara McIntyre, who I also had on the podcast in episode 101. The center served as a touchstone for health and well-being in the community for 15 years. Dr. Andrews served as professor of neurology and chair of basic sciences at an accredited chiropractic college in California for almost 6 years, and she's been adored by students and is affectionately known as Dr. Mo by so many. Holding both a doctorate in chiropractic and master's degree in neuroscience, the breadth and depth of her knowledge is vast. Dr. Mo is best known for her engaging presentations and TED style of speaking, making even the most difficult concepts accessible to all learners. Earlier in her career as a research scientist, Dr. Andrews published peer-reviewed papers in the fields of psychoneuroimmunology and the neurobiology of reward. Today, she speaks internationally on topics such as neurophysiology of subluxation, neurodevelopment of the pediatric patient, evolutionary impact of chiropractic on the brain, and most recently, exploring the connection between chiropractic and consciousness. In addition to being passionate about all things neuro-related, Dr. Mo is deeply committed to easing the path for others. Last year, Dr. Mo and Dr. Mack launched the Prana Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to cultivate an engaged, supportive community that fosters healing, growth, and the fullest expression of our realized selves through continuing education, a professional community, and personal development. So if you're not impressed already, stay tuned for the interview. You are going to get so much from this episode. If you did find value in this interview, please remember to take a screenshot and share this on any social media platform that you are on. Tag me at Dr. Letta and at Kyra Inspired. And also remember to tag Dr. Monique Andrews as well as the Prana Foundation. Here's a friendly reminder to rate and review the podcast. Those help me so much in getting the word out there to the world. And finally, remember to subscribe to the podcast so that you never miss an episode. I think it is fair to say that after this episode, I will only be releasing episodes on a gradual basis. I'm aiming for once a month, ideally the first Monday of every month. And I'm hoping that slowing down the releases of this podcast helps me to find some balance, but also still provide you all with a great resource and some inspiration on a monthly basis. I've loved doing this podcast. I have so much on the docket coming in the next few months. So I appreciate you all just for being here, for tuning in, giving me your ear, giving me your headspace. It's been an honor to just be able to hopefully create a positive impact in your career and in your life. Those of you who know me a little bit better know what's on the horizon for me. And if you're curious, feel free to send me a message anytime. Beyond this podcast, I'm not much of a person who makes everything public, but let's just say that there's lots on the horizon in the near future. Again, my hope is that you've been positively impacted by this podcast in some way. If you would like to ever connect with me, just to pick my brain or even just connect as a friend or a colleague, I always welcome it through any of the social media platforms. So I adore you all. I cherish you all. I appreciate you all. I'm so thankful for this community and for each and every one of you for tuning in every single episode. Now, without further ado, I have the pleasure of introducing my amazing guest once again. So please help me welcome the wise and award-winning speaker, Dr. Monique Andrews. Well, hello everyone, and welcome back to the Cairo Inspire podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Richard Letta, and today I welcome back a great guest, Dr. Mo, if it's okay to say, a phenomenal friend as well. Even though we just met in person once, I feel like I really know you more than some of the people I know in Winnipeg. And if you heard the barking in the back, that's Coda trying to make his appearance on the podcast. But Dr. Mo, I want to thank you again for joining me. You know, we talked about what the plans are for the podcast, and I want to, you know, get some powerful people on here to give back to our fellow colleagues and our friends. So welcome back to the show.
Thanks so much, Richard. I always enjoy our conversations, and delighted to be here with you today and to share with our friends and colleagues in the profession.
Dr. Mo, we were talking about it again, and I think as we talk about our colleagues in the profession, there's something that I want to bring up to as a topic today, and that is essentially the, you know, exploring the role of the chiropractor, because I feel as if students, maybe new doctors, or even you know, veteran chiropractors, they're losing their identity in what it is we do as a profession. And maybe we can say it this way, that there's been there's this false dichotomy in the profession where some people might label themselves as evidence-based, some people might label themselves as vitalistic, but there's also a vast majority of people that think they're actually both. So maybe we can tie those ends together, those loose ends, but explore this idea of what role the chiropractor has in today's society. But before we get into that, Dr. Mo, there's going to be listeners that know who you are. I don't know why. You're actually one of the top downloads of the podcast. So for those that don't know you, give us a brief intro as to who you are.
Sure. I'm Dr. Mo. Most people know me as Dr. Mo. And my background is in neuroscience. I have a master's degree in neuroscience. I was in private practice in Canada for a dozen or so years. And then I taught at a chiropractic college and helped administer the education there for another 6 years. And now I, with my wife, created the Prana Foundation. But, you know, just to give you a little bit of background on why I'm here today, and that is I've been, you know, teaching and speaking about chiropractic, neuroscience, and the body-mind continuum for the last 20 years. And it's really been my passion to try and, I won't say shift the narrative as much as shift the focus in chiropractic towards what I think is a real marriage or the intersection of science and philosophy. And that's basically what I wake up every day is my intention, is to how can we elevate the profession through a deeper understanding of the science while still maintaining our true essence, an intention of chiropractic, which is to, you know, remove interference to the nervous system so that we can allow innate intelligence to fully express itself, and to say that there's science to say, yeah, that's happening.
Yeah. And the thing with what you're saying is that you're really exploring the science of it, you know, the research and what's what studies are being done out there. And I'm of the thought that we need more. And I don't need more to prove that chiropractic works, but we need more to, you know, understand perhaps a little bit more from an educated standpoint. But also the public looks at this, you know, other professions, the government, they look at the science, they look at the research, and that's the means of communication right now in all over the world. So I'm right with you. And I, you know, you talked about this where there's students that don't know it, kind of where they're coming out of, you know, in school. Like, they don't know how they're going to practice. They don't know who they are. They don't know where they want to go. They're somewhat lost. And I, honestly, this is maybe going to be a bit controversial and people are going to hate me for saying this, as they don't know what chiropractic is.
I don't think that's that controversial, Richard. I think there's a lot of confusion happening in schools today. Yeah. And we don't really need to get into all of the socio-political reasons why that's the case. But, you know, you're right in saying that there's not enough science yet. And I'm not into scientism. I don't think that science is the be all and end all, but it is the language, like you said, that our governments and our organizing bodies actually look at. And I think that there is a way to be evidence informed, which is totally different than evidence based, right? And maybe I'll define that in a moment just for our viewers in case anybody doesn't know the difference between evidence informed versus evidence based. But I think, you know, we're never going to reach the volume of science that, say, conventional medicine has. We're just not. We don't have the money. We don't have the resources. But we do have some great organizations out there who are really working hard to do some great science. You know, Foundation for Verbal Subluxation Research, the Australian Spinal Research Foundation. We need to support those agencies, and we need to really support our students coming out. You know, a lot of people talk about serving in our profession. There's a lot of ways to serve. It doesn't always have to be over a table. For me, service has morphed into teaching in whatever way I possibly can. And more I try and give as much as that as I can to students. Because as you said, I think students are graduating and they're confused. They're confused because there's so much disparity in our profession. And you know what? I don't anticipate that's going to go away. So there just needs to be more of us perhaps that are sharing that message where we are maintaining the idea that our philosophy informs our science, and that it certainly doesn't, that having science doesn't negate the philosophy. In fact, we wouldn't have science without philosophy.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree with that. And there is someone posted this where there was an archer, you know, taking a bow and slinging an arrow, and they're essentially looking at the bow as the art, the arrow was the science, and then the archer was the philosophy. And without the philosophy, that bow and arrow has no purpose, and we couldn't really do anything without it. And even with, you know, in the field of medicine or massage therapy, for crying out loud, they have their own philosophy. And their philosophy drives their science, their research, their studies. If, you know, let's say there's a skeptic that is listening to this conversation. And I think, You know, a lot of people know you for being more neuro-focused, Dr. Mo. Let's say they're like, well, I have no time for philosophy. That's just history. We shouldn't be even studying this. What would you say to them if they came up to you and said that?
Yeah, I think I would say, well, I'm really sorry that you've never been educated to understand the importance of philosophy and that there absolutely is a place, that philosophy is not just reading the green books and staying in that framework. You know, I read a lot of green books myself in the day, but I would say that we, if you think that philosophy is just, you know, using the word juxtaposition and living, you know, saying, oh, it has to be this way. I don't believe that. I think that, you know, like anything, philosophy informs our position, our beliefs, our values, our understanding, and also it evolves. So yeah, I don't bleed green, but I do believe that you can't live your life without a philosophy. Like, we all have our personal philosophy in everything that we do. So to say that there's no room for philosophy, now this is probably going to be controversial. I would say that's an uneducated statement to say that philosophy doesn't matter, because you can't live your life even without your own personal philosophy. Of course, philosophy matters. It informs our science. You know, a hypothesis in pure scientific methodology is based on a philosophy. You can't formulate a question without there being a foundation of philosophy.
Mm-hmm. No, well, let's bring it here then. You know, a lot of, let's say for those that do have a philosophy or are exploring the realm of philosophy, let's go back to the students and the new grads that are coming out, Dr. Mo, because a lot of them are the ones listening to this. Let's say they're just really trying to find their role as a chiropractor in today's day and world, especially in COVID times. You know, you get bombarded with news, and obviously with respect to my loving board, we're not going to get into certain topics, but, you know, we've like, personally, I feel like I can't talk about certain things, and that's fine. But, you know, I think chiropractors are just finding, they're finding it hard to embody their philosophy, at 100%, if that makes sense. And a lot of students are coming out of school, coming back to Canada, they can't even talk on certain subjects. So what role can we play as a new or even a veteran chiropractor in today's world?
Yeah, I think one of the most essential pieces, and you specifically mentioned new grads and students, I think the most important they can do is find a trusted mentor. And yeah, you're right, especially in countries like Canada, Australia. It's almost like we're being censored, right? You know, I have the fortunate position to, nobody owns me. I'm not practicing chiropractic anywhere. I'm not worried about my license. I don't work for any company. I can be pretty vocal about my opinions. And I will say this, that my opinions are evidence informed. if I was a new student, new grad coming out today, yeah, I think you have to be mindful, because people's social media platforms are being shut down. Their profiles are being censored. And, you know, I have docs reaching out to me all the time. I'm in trouble with my board. I need some help. Can you give me some science? Can you back me up anyway? So, yeah, you have to be really mindful of the political climate that you're in if you want to maintain your license. And that breaks my heart, you know, that we are being censored in any way at all. And I would say you got to find your people, and you need to belong to a community, and you need good mentors that you can talk to, especially when you're struggling. I think the biggest problem for our new generation of chiropractors is this sense of isolation, which has only been compounded by this endemic. And I call it an endemic and not a pandemic, because that's actually what it is. That maybe is a story for another day, but we need to find our pockets of community, because it's there that we're going to feel safe, that we can thrive and know that we have like-minded hearts and minds that we can lean on when we're feeling isolated and uncertain.
Mm. Now, even going back to our practices, you know, when patients come to see us or practice members, Dr. Mo, you know, what can we start educating them on as a chiropractor? And I asked this specifically to you because you're so neurofocused. You're very evidence informed, and I think you've nailed it down where you understand what the adjustment is. So go ahead and maybe give us some insight as to that.
Yeah, I think you can keep it really simple. I think if you start to educate people that, you know, when we adjust the spine, you know, I say this all the time, when you adjust the spine, you change the brain. And just to let people know that chiropractors are just not back and neck pain doctors. And in fact, you know, when you have pain in your spine somewhere, this, I'm going to give you the rendition of me, the new doc, talking to the new a new patient. Mm-hmm. You know, when you have pain somewhere in your spine, and let's not kid ourselves, something like 90% of visits to chiropractors are for back and neck pain. So that's the place where we begin. And you just tell people, you know, pain is not your problem. I acknowledge your pain. This is what's going on that's creating it. But pain is actually not your problem. It's a sign of the problem. And the bigger issue here is that there is, it's creating this area where the pain is, this, your spine is actually the only way that your brain can communicate with your body. And as you know, your brain controls every cell, organ, and tissue. And so my biggest concern, number one, yep, I want to help you feel better. But even bigger than that for me is making sure that your nervous system can fully communicate 100% so that you can fully express life. And then, boom, and see if they have questions. And then every visit, especially, you know, over the first few months, you want to keep laying over that about how really we're not spine doctors. We're nervous system doctors. And, you know, and eventually you get to the point of talking about innate intelligence. You know, number one, the body's a self-healing organism. Why is that? Mm-hmm. Well, we have a lot of science to suggest that there's innate intelligence, the body, that drives us. And you can start in the place that that's driven by the nervous system. And in fact, I'm happy if that's where you stay. But I'm very discouraged when people say we're just musculoskeletal, because there's plenty of science to say that, you know, we are neuromusculoskeletal, if you want to use all three.
Yeah. And you know what, from what I've been, because I'm watching you, Dr. Mo, you know, you talk about this, you know, a lot of us say that it's above down, inside out, is it fair to say that the adjustment helps from, you know, bottom up? Does that make sense? Where we have this ability to make an adjustment or input a force, and then your body processes that. So can you explain it from that? Well, because I'm trying to understand a little bit more for myself, maybe get more clarity, but for the listeners, of course, explain what you mean by that.
Yeah. You know, whether it's a trauma that happens to the body or stress or even toxicity, whatever you want to call it, what happens generally, your body and your nervous system has a choice. For every force it encounters, it can either take that force and use it constructively to grow and evolve, or that force somehow gets stuck in the body as a pattern of distortion, as a subluxation. And so you can't really think your way out of that. Like, if something gets stuck in the body, it's not something that you can cognitively or that you can think your way through. And actually, if you look at science in somatic therapies like somatic experiencing and polyvagal theory, which, you know, is a passion of mine, mm-hmm. what we know is that it actually takes a bottom-up approach, because a lot of times when you have stress, when you have trauma, it originates, or the part of your brain that gets activated is the brainstem, which is the most primitive part of your brain. And the only way that we can access that is not from the cortex down, it's from the bottom up. And so when you put input into the body where you're releasing those patterns of distortion, then that can trigger a response in your lizard brain and your brainstem that actually then creates upstream effects in the limbic system, in the cortex. And this is not like a fantasy theory. This is fully supported by, you know, trauma research that's been around for many, many years, and by some of the chiropractic research. And I really got interested in it when I started reading Porges Polyvagal, which is, I'll be honest, is a really hard book to read, but there's lots of other awesome books and stories around understanding it. But the idea of a bottom-up approach is, this is what we're doing in chiropractic all the time. The ADIO principle, the above down, inside out. I really, that saying is that, you know, spirit is working through us. And in many ways, when we're growing from a developmental perspective, that is happening above down, inside out. But when we have, you know, energy, patterns of distortion, subluxation in the body, the only way to access that is from the bottom up. It doesn't negate the ADIO principle. In fact, I think it supports it.
Could you do both? Because obviously I've learned a lot through Dr. Joe Dispenza with his work and meditation. Yeah, it sounds like from maybe his perspective that everything could be top down. Is there room for both?
Absolutely. And I think I would argue with you that Dispenza says that you start a narrative in your mind, but actually it's the change that you create in your physiology that allows you to go to the future. He says, you know, you need to have whatever it is that you want to manifest in your life. You need to change your the physiology of your body to that desired state, and then you'll get there. So he really is also saying it does require a change in the bottom in order to affect the top. You know, our mind is a very interesting tool, right? It's a great tool. It's a great servant and a terrible master. And the purpose of meditation, people think that meditation is about not thinking. Like, you have a brain, you're going to think. It's not about not thinking. It's about learning to regulate your thoughts and emotions. And a lot of somatic theories and therapies, and even our approach in applied polyvagal is really about that bottom up. Like, how do we create that change in our internal physiology that our brain can then recognize and create a behavioral, emotional, physiological response to? And that happens. It's amazing.
Well, maybe we can dive into that a little bit more, Dr. Mo, with what is the applied polyvagal theory?
Yeah, so polyvagal theory was created by Stephen Porges. And basically, he started out actually studying HRV like back in the 60s. And he was looking at changes in HRV and people's behavioral responses in when they were confronted with a stressor or a trauma. And he became really curious about why people behave the way they do in response to stress. And so there was this older understanding of the autonomic nervous system, and many people still believe this, that basically there's the sympathetic and the parasympathetic. We have the fight or flight and the rest and digest. And what Porges did was he said, well, actually, no, there's something else happening, because if you look at the vagus nerve, it's actually divided into a myelinated portion, which is the ventral vagal, and an unmyelinated portion, which is the dorsal vagal. And he then looked at how these, he called them neural platforms, how these three different neural platforms had different associated behavioral, emotional, physiological responses to it. And so what we do in our applied polyvagal is explain to you how, as the chiropractor, we can actually help impact what's happening in those different neural platforms through the adjustment and through a series of simple exercises that you can use with your patients. And we break all that down in about a 3-hour class. It's so fun. And the responses we get are awesome. I just posted a funny thing today on our last class. Somebody said, it's like Donnie Epstein and Ted Karik had a baby. And it's kind of like that.
And those are two very, different approaches. But even arguably, I'd say that they're both trying to access the nervous system in their own unique way. Dr. Mo, remind me, if when we were in Calgary, was that something that you went through when we were going through that exercise? Was one of them when you were closing your eyes and breathing a certain way?
Yeah. Well, what I was doing was definitely some ways to regulate your nervous system. Like, in chiropractic, we talk a lot about regulating the autonomic nervous system. And then we can't explain it very well. Like, we know, oh yeah, the brain controls everything, and that happens through the spine and the nerves.
That's my level.
That's why. And it's like, well, actually, we could explain why now. Mm-hmm. And I think, a lot of focus in chiropractic has been on peripheral nervous system. And even the way many chiropractors assess and do objective measurements in their office, they're almost exclusively of the cervical and the lumbar spine. And that's even where they might only do a thermal scan of, they might only take x-rays of the cervical and lumbar spine. And I think that's sort of a fallback on old years of, this is how you educate, right? Mm-hmm. Look at the curve here. Oh, look, it's not as curved as it should be. Or look at the colors. And I think we can take it beyond just educating people, because actually, you could live without your arms and legs, but you can't live without your organs. And so the autonomic nervous system, that thoracic area, and what's happening in the brain that's controlling our autonomics is a much bigger story. So what if you could, in your practice, actually be focusing on, I almost hesitate to say it, what really matters, mm-hmm. are vital organs that are keeping you alive. And we can, right? And that's what I love about polyvagal and assessing the different neural platforms of autonomic nervous system. And it's also why I think every single chiropractor should have HRV in their practice. We actually have a validated way, an objective measure to evaluate the function of the autonomic nervous system. I don't know why everybody wouldn't be doing that.
You know, I thought about this. You know how we have these, I just got an Apple Watch for as a gift, but there's some pieces of advice or devices that could actually measure your HRV all the time. I wonder if we had like 1,000 or, 10,000 of those and had those patients under chiropractic care, see what their HRV was like, adjustment or pre-adjustment, during adjustment, post-adjustment, and just see what like kind of effects that they are on a daily basis. I think that would be really cool.
That's actually something that's recommended, Richard. And I will tell you that on May 15th, we're actually doing another course on HRV in practice to educate doctors because, I think a lot of doctors buy this really expensive equipment and there's some great, systems out there. There's also some really economical personal systems that your patients could have. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that we recommend is that you get every single patient using a personal HRV system and you help them monitor that. And that, in fact, in athletic performance and even in, amateur athletes now, they are really harnessing the power that HRV allows them to understand the state of physiological readiness of their body. How hard should I work out today? Oh, you know what? Actually, looking at my HRV this morning, I think I need to take it easy. And we're truly entering into a realm where we can start to harness this technology that used to only be available, at a really high level, that's now available personally. You can buy your own, with a simple heart rate monitor and an app on your phone, you can look at your own HRV every day. And I think we as the chiropractor can then serve as the touch point or the educator for our patients about what that means. That goes well beyond, just working over the table. And maybe that's a whole other conversation, but I think, as a chiropractor, we should be teaching our patients. And there are many ways that we can serve. And that goes beyond the adjustment. And I don't think it's sacrilegious to say that.
To some, it might be.
Maybe. Not to me. Not to any of the young docs that I'm talking to today. They are on the HRV, absolutely, totally get it, want it. How do we do it? And
So maybe we can take it here. We talk about the role of the chiropractor. Maybe we can talk about the role of different techniques, Dr. Moore. Like I'm going off the cuff right now. I'm getting questions from what you're describing, and things are coming to my head. Now there's different techniques in chiropractic. There's tonal, there's structural, there's segmental. What role do those have in the profession? And because it's going to be very different, even if you took something like let's not get specific, just anything structural versus something tonal. They're going to have, very different perspectives. So what would you say to that?
I would say that technique matters to the practitioner, not to the patient. It's only us chiropractors that argue about these things. And even the science today supports that, whether you use HVLA or a tonal approach, a sustained contact, you actually still will elicit neurological changes in the body. And they're still hashing out, there's some science that says an HVLA, both HVLA and tonal will elicit, say for example, a somatosensory evoked potential in the brain, but HVLA will elicit it for a longer period of time. Now, we do not have longitudinal studies looking at neurophysiology of chiropractic adjustments at this point. So that's some science that we need to see, and we need to see more of it, and we need to see it repeated. Mm-hmm. I love that. I'm going to give a Reggie Gold quote here. Reggie said, it doesn't matter. If your intention is pure, it doesn't matter how you do it. You can hit him in the ass with a shovel. And if you're correcting subluxation, then chiropractic works. I honestly believe, and this happens to me all the time, I'll be doing a presentation on chiropractic and the immune system, and someone will say, well, what's the adjustment for that? And I'm like, the one that works, the one that clears the nervous system. It's not about the technique. Find something that makes your heart sing. This is for the students and new docs. Find something, find the technique or techniques, because I don't believe you just have to do one thing, that makes your heart sing, that you feel is most in alignment with your soul's purpose, and do that because that's what's going to be most effective for you. Now, what if you're an upper cervical doc or a full spine doc and you have somebody come in and they're not responding to your care? You also need to do not come at it from a scarcity mentality. Refer them to another doc that does something different than you because maybe something different will work for them. you know, I had other docs that I referred to in my practice. I had a functional neurologist that I referred to when I had cases. I was like, this is as far as I can take it for this person who still needs some rehabilitative recovery. That's what niches like functional neurology are for, right? You know, you have somebody that is somebody who's spent their whole life having migraines and you're a full spine doc. You know, maybe it's time to send them off to an incredible NUCA doc or AO or whatever. They're doing some incredible work that is, you know, maybe a little bit more subtle than what you're doing. There's room for all of it. And I honestly think that the technique only matters to the chiropractor. The patients don't care. They don't know what Gonstead is. They don't know what NUCA is. Just make it go away, doc. Make me better, right?
So do you think we should have some sort of standardized type of care? Because I think there's a lot of that. That's sort of the narrative that I'm seeing. Perhaps if we explore some of the socioeconomic, political, however you want to say it, narratives. But I feel like they're trying to create this. But the thing that I am seeing that it sort of just all kind of pigeonholes us into those only purely MSK conditions. But what do you think? Because I think that's where it could be troublesome. Is like if we don't know what to do in this case, like how do we know when to refer out to a different practitioner?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think it actually brings into our conversation the idea of evidence-based versus evidence-informed. And I'll just drop, you know, the difference. Yeah. So evidence-based says like you follow the research and that's how you determine everything. If you're an evidence-based only, then you read the research and that's what you do. And in fact, there's plenty of research, musculoskeletal research, that'll be like, okay, if this test and this test and this test are positive and they had it for this long and the change is by this much percent, then this is the treatment plan. And those it tends to be very prescriptive and very short term. Like if you don't see a change within six visits, you're done, refer out. Mm-hmm. That's not my philosophy because I think it discounts the evidence-informed perspective. Now, here's what evidence-informed is. You do take into account the research. That's one piece of a trifecta. The other two portions are of which the chiropractor's experience, right? That's the second one. And then the third one is what are the patient's goals, right? So we're not just saying this is what the research says. And there's even apps, there's programs you can plug into your neurological and orthopedic and chiropractic exam findings, and it'll spit out, this is the treatment plan, here's the exercises you should give them, and here's a research article to support what you're recommending. And the musculoskeletal docs love that. And in fact, for people maybe that are very linearly inclined, you know, and you want a pain-based practice, that's the way to go. That's not for me. And I think it negates the level of experience and expertise of the practitioner and the goals of the patient. So I would argue for an evidence-informed approach because I do not disregard the science and the current data. And I love being able to pull out research papers that support my thesis that when you adjust the spine, you change the brain, and there's enough of them. And then I also take into account how much experience do I have? What is my expertise in this area? And oh, hey, by the way, what does the patient want? I mean, you know, not every patient is coming to get fixed. Many patients have a perspective of performance, prevention, wellness. You know, you want to take all of those things into account. My greatest fear is that if we keep going down this evidence-based musculoskeletal road, what's going to happen is that we won't be able to see people for wellness. We won't be able to see them for performance and prevention because it'll be prescribed. And in Canada, I think we're getting closer and closer to that. You know, they're trying to, there's a big fight going on here in BC around X-ray. The next thing, it'll be pediatric care. And then they'll start to try and be very prescriptive around, nope, you can only see people this many times. That would break my heart. You know, that's happening in countries like Australia, and they have a lockdown again right now where they're completely shut down. Chiropractic is so much more than a musculoskeletal back and neck pain approach to treating peripheral nerves. It is not that. Yeah. That's my rant.
I feel you. And I agree with you with if not all of it, so all, 99% of it. I'd have to listen to that because there's so much in there. But Dr. Mo, like the point is that I think everybody in chiropractic, or at least the 80% in the middle, agree with you. But then we have this again, this false dichotomy that says, oh, I'm an evidence-based chiropractor, I'm a principal chiropractor, or a neurostructural chiropractor, or a tonal chiropractor. It's like, you're a chiropractor. Now, where do we go with this evidence-informed practice, and how do we serve our community, you know, even better and best? And I think it's hard, especially in today's culture, because we can't even see each other in person anymore. And all of us are doing these Zoom calls, and we can't have these connections. And it's sort of the trouble with internet culture. You can't really get full depth of one's understanding or have a proper discussion or conversation around a certain topic. And I think that's, you know, as a profession, we need to come together a little bit more and have communication with one another. I wanted to talk about this, Dr. Mo. There's this concept of cultivating resilience that you or Dr. Mack are talking about. What is that? Maybe that's a brief intro into a future episode with her.
Yeah, it's a great question. I think resilience, I mean, it's become very topical now. I think the cover of Oprah magazine this month is actually resilience. Mm-hmm. And I think it's something that's very, like, I think that's what we do as chiropractors. We help to cultivate resilience. Maybe I'll define resilience for the audience. Resilience is the ability to prepare for, adapt to, and recover from stress, trauma, you name it. And so it sounds a lot like adaptability, doesn't it? And, mm-hmm. and in fact, it's just a little bit higher than that, because it takes into account your ability to adapt, but also to prepare for, to recover. And essentially that you can adapt to and have a positive outcome from anything that you encounter. So for me, resilience in the highest sense really, I think, aligns beautifully with what I think us as chiropractors, at least with a philosophical leaning, think that we do. We help people function at their most highest level and create positive outcomes. That is resilience. And so how do we start to have that conversation? Because I think, and I said this in a conversation I had earlier this week, one of the silver linings around this COVID business is we're maybe shifting the conversation away from pain to stress. Because let's face it, like, everybody right now is probably in a sympathetic dominant state, unless they're meditating 2 hours a day. Like, you know, these are stressful times. We are isolated. We're taken away from our communities. We're forced to wear masks. And to do things as chiropractors, especially, that are completely counter to our health philosophy and even our understanding of the science. Community is really important. I cannot wait till we can get back to, you know, meeting together, because, you know, while we can create communities on Zoom, it's not the same. I don't know. What was the question?
Yeah, what is cultivating resilience?
What is resilience?
Yeah, resilience to me, it does account for the adaptability within us. But to me, there's also an essence of strength that you are capable or even beyond capable of what you think you think you are. So yeah. Maybe go back to and finish the question of cultivating resilience. Like, what is it? What are you guys starting to cover with that?
Yeah. So here's what I think. I think if chiropractors knew the level of influence that they had, more people would be under care. Because here's the thing. Yeah, the adjustment is at the centerpiece of everything that we do, and we create an incredible change with that. But there's some unique aspects with chiropractic. We spend more time with our patients. They see us more frequently. We develop relationships. There's this concept in polyvagal theory. It's called co-regulation. Now, when you are an infant, you do not know how to self-regulate your emotions, okay? Your caregiver, a nurturing caregiver, will, and this is neurologically based, there's a reason this happens, which I won't get into today, but a nurturing caregiver, through a process of co-regulation, nurturing, right, will help you learn to regulate your emotions. And really, that's through a regulation of physiology. Here's my theory, and that is that chiropractors are super co-regulators. That we act for our patients as a regulator of the tone of their nervous system, the response of their physiology, the impact that we have on those different autonomic neural platforms, and even their emotional expression. We're not therapists. I don't think we should go into anybody's trauma narrative. What I do know is that as chiropractors, we're kind of living up here somewhere, right? Like we have this, there's a level of, I don't love the word hope, but like we create that. We bring lightness to people's lives. They feel hopeful in our offices. They feel like there's something else, right? We bring them somewhere. At least I think if you are a chiropractor that is really philosophically based, that believes that we're these self-healing, self-maintaining, self-regulating organisms. I mean, there's the word right there, self-regulation. This is one of the main tenets of polyvagal. And I think, and this is what we teach in our course, is when you combine chiropractic with some very simple exercises that help you at bring up parasympathetic tone, you are a co-regulator in the very essence of the sense. And that level of helping people increase their level of expression to increase parasympathetic tone in their body actually cultivates resilience. I'm not saying we're the only ones that do that, but I'm saying we are perfectly positioned to do it. And it's not outside of our scope as chiropractors to add some very simple exercises in conjunction with the adjustment and the care in our practice. Takes a minute. Okay. It's not some whole extra, you got to go sit in a room with a laser for 15 minutes. That's not what I'm talking about. It's very simple. And we see it with changes in heart rate variability. So, you know, I'm a big proponent of that as well. You can add a few things to bring up resilience. And heart rate variability is what we say measures resilience, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you're saying that you're doing it, why not measure it too? And oh, by the way, here's a way to do it even better.
Well, speaking of that, then how can doctors reach out to you or learn more about your course, Dr. Mo?
Yeah. You know, if follow me on Instagram or Facebook, I post stuff on there all the time. If you go to my link tree, which is Dr. Monique Andrews, go to the Prana Foundation. There's links all over that. I don't know. Are we live today, Richard?
We are live.
So that the course on polyvagal is tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. You can still register for that. Just go to my page and you can get a link, or I can drop a link here in the comments. And the HRV course is in 3 weeks, I guess, then May 15th. Mm-hmm. And both of those have CE if you attend the live class. You also get recordings of the class as well as all the exercises. I know Dr. Mack has got some different oats and stuff that she's planned to make available for everybody. So yeah, if you don't follow me on social, do so. I'm always dropping cool science and stuff like that.
You are. Well, if for the listeners that are catching this later, Dr. Mo, can they still get to those courses if they wanted to?
Yep. Yeah. Okay. You can buy the recordings after the fact. If you can't make the live class, you won't get CE, but you'll still get the same recordings and all the resources. And in fact, we usually do a follow-up live Q&A about a month later so that people can try it out in their practice. And literally, you will take the course on Saturday and you can use it in your practice on Monday. You will leave those 3 hours knowing how to do it and be able to start to implement it right away. And docs that have done it, so many of the docs that do the course start doing polyvagal right away. And they're like, I can't believe the changes I'm seeing in my patients. It's allowing us to go much deeper with the level of their care and the commitment and return that they see. So yeah, go to either my Facebook or my Instagram and you'll see links on there, or to the Prana Foundation.
Okay. Well, I think you're going to have to start a university or a chiropractic college in BC, Dr. Mo, just kind of listening to what's going on. And I think, you've really found your role, like what you really love to do. When we met in Calgary, I just saw it in you and Dr. Mac, how much you love what you do. And I've been so blessed to be able to meet you both, connect with you both, and just see how much you've expanded even beyond that time. So as we finish off, I want to ask you this last question, Dr. Mo. You know, what keeps you inspired to keep working at this every single day?
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, you asked me that and I feel a bit emotional, because it's really about the new student and the young grad. They're struggling so much right now, and there's so much isolation in the world and in our profession. I think that, you know, we as established docs and chiropractors, we service comes in many ways. And I think we need to make ourselves available to these new docs and students who really are feeling the crush right now. I don't know how the schools are managing it with students learning from home. How do we learn to be a chiropractor on Zoom? I don't know. And so for me, I can't not do this. That's how I feel about it. And I, you know, I was blessed to have great mentors myself. And I was told right at the beginning of my career, you have to give back, not just when it's convenient, but every single day. And so I don't know how else to do it besides just put my, you know, blood, sweat, and tears into the new chiropractors entering into this profession, because they are going to be the leaders of the profession. So we need to support them as much as we can right now.
Well, Dr. Mo, I think you are doing just that. And I do want to thank you again for joining us, and again for literally all that you do. So thank you for joining me.
Thank you, Richard. Thank you so much. Appreciate and love you.
Thank you for listening to the Cairo Inspired Podcast. If you found value in today's episode, please take some time to rate and review this on iTunes or wherever you're listening. If you know a friend or colleague who you think may get value from this episode or podcast, please feel free to share this with them. My goal is to always provide you with value and to leave you inspired. I believe that inspiration is all around us, but more importantly, first comes from within us. We are all a source of inspiration for others and also for ourselves. If you have any suggestions or know anyone who would be a great guest, please feel free to email me or connect with me at www.drletta.com. I look forward to connecting with you. So until next time, this is Dr. Rich. Peace out.